Greetings to everyone, and welcome to another Weber Training Teleclass. This one is Improving Hand Hygiene. My name is Paul Weber, and on behalf of my colleague, Dr. Syed Zatar, I would like to thank you for joining us today. This is International Infection Control Week, and we couldn't have just any topic, and we couldn't have just any faculty this week. The occasion called for the very best, and it is indeed the very best that we have for you today. Dr. John Boyce is an epidemiologist by training. He is the Section Chief of Infectious Diseases and Director of the Hand Hygiene Resource Center at the Hospital of St. Raphael in Connecticut. And in his spare time, he is also a professor at the Yale University Medical School. Dr. Boyce is a name well known to most or probably all of us on this teleclass. With Didier Pité, he co-authored the CDC Hand Hygiene Guidelines. He was also a significant contributor to the WHO Hand Hygiene Guidelines. And he's published and lectured on a wide variety of infection control topics. In fact, I believe just this week he has returned from lecturing in Amsterdam. So it is a great honor to have him as faculty for this teleclass. But before Dr. Boyce begins, let me also say that it is an honor to have the fine folks of DEB Canada and the DEB Group Worldwide as sponsor for our teleclass today. They have been great supporters of teleclass education for several years. And to Marvin Maurer, David Green, and the rest of the folk at DEB, I say thank you very much. Now to present the teleclass, Improving Hand Hygiene. From New Haven, Connecticut, it is my pleasure to present Dr. John Boyce. John.
Thanks, Paul. It's a pleasure for me to spend some time today talking about improving hand hygiene in healthcare settings. On the first slide I have entitled Importance of Hand Hygiene, it reviews the fact that I think all of you know that healthcare-associated pathogens most often are transferred via contaminated hands of healthcare workers. And as a result, hand hygiene is considered to be one of the most important measures for reducing the incidence of healthcare-associated infections. Many studies conducted between 1980 and 2000 found that compliance of healthcare workers with recommended hand washing procedures has really been unacceptably low and averaged around 40%. On the next slide, I wanted to mention that in an effort to improve hand hygiene practices, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention published a guideline for hand hygiene in healthcare settings in October of 2002. This guideline provides healthcare institutions with a variety of strategies for improving hand hygiene practices among healthcare workers. The guideline emphasizes the importance of administrative support for hand hygiene promotion campaigns and the development of new educational and motivational material related to hand hygiene, as well as providing healthcare workers with an alcohol-based hand rub that can be used routinely for cleaning hands as long as they're not visibly dirty or visibly contaminated with blood or other body fluids. And the guideline also points out the importance of monitoring hand hygiene compliance and providing healthcare workers with some feedback regarding their performance. Next slide. In October of 2005, the World Health Organization announced the availability of a new hand hygiene guideline for healthcare as part of their Global Alliance for Patient Safety Program. And under the direction of Professor Didier Pité at the University of Geneva, a group of experts from really all around the world went through the process of updating and expanding the CDC guideline and produced a document containing recommendations that can be applied in all geographic areas, including countries with very limited healthcare resources. Even more recently, the Institute for Healthcare Improvement in the United States developed a brief guideline for improving hand hygiene practices among healthcare workers. This IHI guide, as well as the guidelines published by CDC and the WHO, contain many specific recommendations that can assist all types of healthcare settings to improve compliance of healthcare workers with recommended hand hygiene practices. And today I want to spend a fair amount of time reviewing some of the strategies that you can implement to improve hand hygiene compliance in your facility. Next slide. Now, all the recent guidelines recommend that hospitals and other healthcare facilities develop specific programs to improve hand hygiene compliance. And they emphasize the fact that such programs need to have multiple different components in order to be effective. Such programs are often referred to as multimodal programs. Now, some of the essential elements of successful hand hygiene programs include support from high-level administrators, involving healthcare workers in the planning process, developing new educational and motivational materials that are based on the new guidelines, monitoring adherence to recommended hand hygiene practices, and then providing healthcare workers with feedback regarding their performance, and also making an alcohol-based hand rub readily available near the point of care. Now, in order to make an alcohol-based hand rub readily available, some healthcare facilities have been able to attach hand rub dispensers directly to the foot of each patient's bed, while others have placed dispensers on the wall near the patient's bed. Some facilities, particularly those with a lot of single patient rooms, have favored placing dispensers in the hallway immediately adjacent to the door of each patient's room. Now, in addition to these approaches, some facilities provide individual pocket-sized containers of an alcohol-based hand rub to healthcare workers so that it will always be near them and available. Next slide. Now, one of the first things that should be done when developing a multimodal hand hygiene promotion campaign is to make sure you secure administrative support for the program. You should discuss the rationale for developing a hand hygiene campaign with your hospital's quality improvement committee, if you have one, and with high-level administrators and clinicians. For example, the hospital chief executive officer, the head of nursing, department chairman are all people that should be included in these discussions. And securing appropriate administrative support is really critical in order to assure that adequate financial and personnel resources are made available to carry out the campaign. Next slide. Now, some important points that should be discussed with hospital administrators and quality improvement committee members include the high costs that are associated with healthcare-associated infections, the importance of contaminated hands in the spread of healthcare-associated pathogens, the long history of poor adherence of healthcare workers to recommended hand-washing protocols, and the advantages of using an alcohol-based hand rub for routine cleaning of hands before and after patient contact. Next slide. Now, hospitals or extended care facilities in the United States should remind their administrators that the Joint Commission on Accreditation of Healthcare Organizations put out a Sentinel event alert, which was released in January of 2003. And this alert recommended that all hospitals comply with the CDC guideline for hand hygiene in healthcare settings. The internet website for this Sentinel event alert is listed at the bottom of the slide. Now, in other countries, one should try to determine if there's any national organization that is responsible for inspecting or accrediting hospitals that may have made a recommendation about improving hand hygiene practices. It may also be helpful to make administrators aware of the World Health Organization's Global Patient Safety Challenge, which recommends that healthcare institutions in all countries improve hand hygiene practices in order to reduce the incidence of healthcare-associated infections. The new WHO hand hygiene guidelines can be downloaded from the internet website listed at the bottom of this slide. And if administrators are familiar with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, making the CDC guideline available to them might also be helpful. Next slide. Now, at the Hospital of St. Raphael, where I work, we requested administrative support for the following things: to form a multidisciplinary hand hygiene committee, consent to hold a contest to select a slogan for our hand hygiene campaign. We needed approval to install new alcohol-based hand rub in all clinical areas, and we needed the resources and approval to post hand hygiene cartoon reminders throughout the hospital. And then finally, we asked for 8 additional hours of time for an existing part-time infection control practitioner to serve as a hand hygiene resource person. Now, of course, it may not be possible in all hospitals to convince administrators to add additional personnel time that can be devoted to hand hygiene campaign, but I suggest that you might want to at least explore this possibility given the importance of hand hygiene in reducing healthcare-associated infections. Next slide. Now, when planning a hand hygiene promotion campaign, it's really strongly recommended that you form a multidisciplinary hand hygiene team or committee. Membership on such a team should include representatives from the hospital administration, the Department of Nursing, your infection control program, the department in your facility that supplies hand hygiene products to the different patient care areas, and whenever possible, one or more physician representatives. If you have a physician who is involved in your infection control program, of course, it's highly desirable to have this individual involved in the planning of your promotional campaign. Members of this team should also be involved in developing the educational and motivational material for the campaign, and they should also be involved in selecting an alcohol-based hand rub for use in your facility. Next slide. Whenever possible, it's desirable to evaluate several alcohol-based hand rub products, and the persons that should be involved in this include the personnel from your infection control program, nursing department administrators, nurses from several different patient care areas, and whenever possible, one or more physicians. Some of the important product characteristics that you should evaluate include whether or not the product has a strong smell of alcohol or perfume. I personally feel that lightly scented products that have a fragrance that more or less disappears soon after application are likely to be acceptable to the greatest number of nurses, physicians, and other healthcare workers. The product should also have a consistency that is agreeable to personnel. In some facilities, personnel prefer a product that has more of a water-like consistency. However, in the United States, healthcare workers seem to prefer a product that is in the form of either a gel or a foam, and any one of these types of products is acceptable. Now make sure that you select a product that does not feel greasy or sticky during or after application. Importantly, the product that you select should produce little or no skin irritation, even when it's used many times per day by personnel. Healthcare workers will not use a product as frequently as they should if it causes substantial skin irritation. Whenever possible, evaluate the dispensers that will be used to deliver the product that you're considering. We found that poorly functioning dispensers discouraged personnel from using the product that we had earlier, and so when we made our current product selection, we made sure that the dispensers worked reliably. Also, the dispenser should deliver an appropriate volume of the product. If the volume of the product delivered to the healthcare worker's hand is too small, the product will not result in the desired reduction of bacteria or viruses on the hand. Next slide. It's also desirable to use several strategies for education of healthcare workers. Now, many facilities provide personnel with periodic lectures that are usually given by one or more local experts who might be members of your infection control program or sometimes a physician who has a special interest in promoting hand hygiene. In facilities where appropriate computer support is available, many hospitals have found that PowerPoint presentations are a useful way of presenting educational material. If your facility has access to interactive audience response software, this has also been found to be a useful way of educating personnel about hand hygiene. Of course, not all facilities will have access to this type of computer support, and lectures and seminars presented using other methods can clearly be useful. If your facility has the capability of showing videotape presentations, then you should consider obtaining a professionally produced hand hygiene education video, either from an infection control professional organization, such as the Association for Professionals in Infection Control in the United States, or a similar organization in your area if they have produced such a video. Another source of videos would be product manufacturers or a company that specializes in continuing medical education videotapes. In hospitals that have computer-assisted education programs on their hospital intranet, then hand hygiene education modules can be made available to all personnel at any time of day or night. Next slide. Regardless of which methods you use to present educational material, you want to provide healthcare workers with examples of types of clinical activities that can result in contamination of their hands with healthcare-associated pathogens. You should also discuss the advantages and disadvantages of using an alcohol-based hand rub versus washing your hands with soap and water. Also, make sure that you describe the major indications for hand hygiene and provide healthcare workers with some instructions about how to clean their hands with an alcohol-based hand rub or when washing their hands with soap and water. You should tell your colleagues that if they have applied an adequate amount of an alcohol-based hand rub to their hands, it should take at least 15 to as much as 30 seconds of rubbing their hands together before they feel dry. If the individual hands feel dry after rubbing them together for less than 15 seconds, then the individual has probably not applied an adequate volume of the product to their hands. Remind your colleagues that when they are washing their hands with soap and water, that the soap should have contact with their hands for at least 15 seconds in order to achieve the desired reduction in hand contamination. Next slide. Most healthcare workers realize that their hands can be contaminated with pathogens when they are handling infected or colonized wounds, or when they come in contact with patient excretions or secretions. However, I find that many healthcare workers do not realize that healthy, normal-appearing areas of the patient's skin are often colonized with healthcare-associated pathogens. For example, this slide shows that patients who have methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, or MRSA, will have the organism on their skin in the area of their axilla 13% to 25% of the time. They have the organism on their hand or their arms 40% of the time, and in the inguinal area 30 to 39% of the time. Similarly, patients who are colonized with vancomycin-resistant enterococci have the organism on their skin above their waist 38% of the time, on their hands 29% of the time, and on the skin in their inguinal area in 86% of patients. So personnel should be reminded that they can contaminate their hands by carrying out activities such as just helping the patient up in bed, taking a blood pressure or pulse, or during other activities that would appear to be at low risk of hand contamination. Next slide. I have also found that many healthcare workers are unaware of the fact that they may contaminate their hands with healthcare-associated pathogens by touching environmental surfaces near affected patients. The green bars on this graph show the percent of surfaces that were contaminated with VRE in the rooms of patients who were colonized or infected with this organism. As you can see, bed linens, patient gowns, overbed tables, blood pressure cuffs, and the side rails of beds are not uncommonly contaminated with VRE. The blue bars on this graph show how frequently the different types of environmental surfaces are contaminated with MRSA in the rooms of patients who have this organism in either a wound or in their urine. I think it's also important to point out that several recent studies have documented that touching such contaminated surfaces results in hand contamination of personnel, and that the number of organisms that contaminate their hands is sufficient to transfer the pathogen to another surface. Next slide. As part of your education program, you want to make sure that you discuss with your colleagues the advantages of using an alcohol-based hand rub for routinely cleaning their hands, except in those instances where their hands are visibly dirty or visibly contaminated with blood or secretions. Compared to hand washing with soap and water, alcohol-based hand rubs have the following advantages. The hand rubs are actually more effective in reducing the number of viable bacteria or viruses on the hands. They require less time to use. They can be made accessible near the point of care, even in facilities where there are few sinks available for hand washing. And they have been shown in several studies to actually cause less hand irritation and dryness than washing hands repeatedly with soap and water. However, alcohol-based hand rubs have poor activity against spore-forming organisms such as Clostridium difficile, and so many experts recommend that if hospitals are having a particular problem with Clostridium difficile infections, that healthcare workers wash their hands with soap and water after caring for patients with C. difficile, and then to use an alcohol-based hand rub for caring for other patients. Next slide. Make sure that your hand hygiene education sessions discuss with healthcare workers the five main indications for hand hygiene. These include cleaning hands before having direct contact with patients, before performing a clean or invasive procedure, such as inserting an intravenous catheter or bladder catheter, after having contact with body fluids such as blood, vomit, or urine, after touching objects in the immediate environment of the patient, such as bed rails, tables, or pieces of medical equipment that might be contaminated, and after having direct contact with patients. Also, make sure to remind personnel that hands should be cleaned after removing gloves that may have been worn while taking care of the patient. At least four different studies have documented that healthcare workers' hands can still become contaminated while wearing gloves, and for this reason, the CDC and WHO guidelines recommend that hand hygiene be performed following removal of gloves. Next slide. As I mentioned earlier, if your hospital has a computer-assisted learning material on your hospital intranet, this can be a helpful way to make hand hygiene education material available to employees at any time of day or night. For example, at the Hospital of St. Raphael, we have a system called SynQuest that allows us to put a PowerPoint-like presentation on the hospital intranet and then to have employees take a simple test to see if they have comprehended the material. This system records the names of personnel that have completed the test, which is useful in determining how widely the learning module is being used by personnel. Next slide. Many types of motivational materials have been used by healthcare institutions as part of their promotion campaigns. Examples include colorful posters emphasizing the importance of hand hygiene, posters with photographs of influential hospital staff accompanied by a reminder statement about the importance of hand hygiene, and in pediatric hospitals, drawings that are either designed for children or drawings that are actually made by children have been used as part of hand hygiene promotion campaigns. Next slide. At the Hospital of St. Raphael, hand hygiene cartoons like the one shown on this slide were obtained by special arrangement from Dr. Didia Pitet in Geneva, Switzerland, and then personnel on each of our hospital wards and clinical departments were asked to develop a caption for one of the cartoons. And then nurses on each ward were asked about where they thought the poster should be displayed in order to be visible to a large number of personnel. The hospital administration approved painting a special background on the walls at the selected locations so that posters would be more noticeable. However, many types of posters have been used in different healthcare facilities, and it's certainly not necessary to have access to professionally produced cartoons or posters. In hospitals where such resources are not available, even simple posters can be effective reminders. Next slide. Some hospitals have been able to develop computer screen savers that contain reminders about the importance of hand hygiene. Others have found it very helpful to identify important physicians or nurses who are really highly respected in the institution and who have shown a commitment to improving hand hygiene, and to try to utilize these individuals as role models. Another strategy that's been utilized in some facilities is to encourage patients or their family members to remind healthcare workers to clean their hands prior to having contact with the patient. Other facilities have encouraged competition between wards or hospital services for the best hand hygiene compliance rates and have provided the groups with the best compliance with small rewards, such as a voucher for a free cup of coffee or theater tickets, or in some instances, a trophy that's kept on the ward with the best compliance level. One of the very important strategies emphasized in the recent guidelines is to monitor compliance of healthcare workers with recommended hand hygiene practices and to provide feedback to healthcare workers regarding their level of compliance. Now, in most institutions, compliance rates are generally determined for each ward or maybe each hospital service and for each healthcare worker job classification. For example, many hospitals calculate specific compliance rates for nurses, for physicians, and for other healthcare personnel. And then this material is presented to as many personnel as possible. Although a few hospitals have told me that when they present feedback to personnel on a ward, that they only present them with their compliance rate without showing them the rates achieved on other wards. However, I think that most hospitals feel that it's a good idea to show each ward how they compare with other wards in order to stimulate a competitive atmosphere for improving hand hygiene compliance. Next slide. Currently, the most widely used method for determining compliance rates is by conducted periodic observational surveys performed by trained personnel. In order to be reasonably reliable, these surveys must be consistent in terms of definitions for what constitutes a hand hygiene opportunity, the criteria for compliance and for lack of compliance, and the criteria for appropriate use of gloves. In order to obtain reliable information that can be used to compare the results from one survey to another survey in your facility, every effort should be made to have observations performed by a limited number of personnel who have received specific training on hand hygiene monitoring. For instance, in some facilities, observational surveys are conducted by trained infection control practitioners. However, this has not always been feasible, and other types of personnel can conduct observational surveys as long as they have received adequate training. Many different approaches have been used to conduct the observational surveys. On the left-hand side of this slide, you can see a hand hygiene monitoring tool that we have used at Hospital of St. Raphael. This monitoring tool can be downloaded from the internet website shown at the bottom of the slide by clicking on a tab for educational tools. After we used this form for several surveys, we then transferred the form to a Palm-based computer, which is carried by our infection control practitioners. The same variables were recorded on the Palm device by the same infection control practitioners who performed earlier surveys. By using the Palm-based device, analysis of the survey results were much faster. However, it's clear that such devices are not going to be available in many facilities, and it's certainly not necessary to use this kind of a high-tech approach to recording survey results. Next slide. This slide is a hand hygiene monitoring tool that we are currently evaluating for possible use by designated nurses on each ward of the hospital. The form allows the observer to record the date and the shift on which the observation was made, the healthcare worker type, which is coded onto the form using the codes in the middle of the form, and then whether or not hand hygiene was performed before touching the patient or after touching the patient or environmental objects in the room. It also allows the observer to record whether or not the healthcare worker cleaned his or her hands by washing with soap and water or by using an alcohol-based hand rub. Because we have been interested in compliance with gloves and with gown use when patients are in isolation, we've also included spaces on this form for recording compliance with gloves and gowns. One important point that I want to make is about having these observational surveys conducted by multiple nurses on different wards, is that the form that you're going to use must be very easy to interpret and fill out, and very careful instructions have to be provided to the nurses so that they will understand the criteria for compliance or lack of compliance. Next slide. This is another example of a hand hygiene monitoring tool, which is included in the Institute for Healthcare Improvement Guide for Improving Hand Hygiene. Although I don't have time to review this form in detail, I have included it here so that those of you who are in the process of developing a hand hygiene monitoring tool for your institution are aware that this is available from IHI. Next slide. Some of the problems associated with doing observational surveys of hand hygiene compliance include the fact that they can be rather time-consuming to conduct. When multiple individuals are involved in making the observations, one has to be aware that not all observers will make observations in the same manner, which raises the issue of inter-rater variability. Another potential problem with performing observational surveys is that healthcare workers may modify their behavior when they know they're being observed, the so-called Hawthorne effect. And finally, lack of standardization of current observational techniques makes comparison with other hospitals very problematic. Well, as a result of these problems, there's a definite need for looking at alternative methods for determining hand hygiene compliance rates. Next slide. One approach that may be helpful in some facilities with limited personnel resources is to look at the possibility of monitoring the volume of alcohol-based hand rub used in order to estimate whether or not hand hygiene compliance rates are improving. At the Hospital of St. Raphael, we prospectively monitored the amount of alcohol-based hand gel used throughout the hospital and express this as the number of liters of alcohol hand gel used per 1,000 patient days. This graph shows the number of liters of alcohol hand gel used per 1,000 patient days on the x-axis and the percent hand hygiene compliance on the y-axis. As you can see by the line drawn through the points on the graph, there appeared to be a fairly good correlation between the volume of alcohol-based hand rub used and the improvement in hand hygiene compliance. However, I would point out that one of the disadvantages of using such a measuring system is that it does not provide information about when healthcare workers are cleaning their hands relative to their contact with patients. Next slide. One approach used by Swoboda and colleagues was to use an electronic voice prompt to remind healthcare workers to perform hand hygiene. This required installing electronic monitoring devices in the rooms of patients and having computer software that would issue a vocal reminder to individuals who did not clean their hands upon leaving a patient's room. While this approach is pretty interesting, it is certainly not practical in many healthcare institutions, especially those with limited resources. Another strategy that's been looked at is to place electronic counters inside of alcohol-based hand rub dispensers and to determine if the frequency with which personnel access the dispenser correlates reasonably well with the results of observational surveys. Clearly, more studies are needed to determine if using such electronic counters in dispensers accurately reflects hand hygiene compliance rates. As I mentioned earlier, some institutions are evaluating doing observational surveys using ward personnel rather than infection control practitioners. This approach may make it practical for healthcare workers to get feedback more frequently regarding their performance, and of course will reduce the amount of time necessary for infection control practitioners to spend on observational surveys. Self-assessment of compliance, that is, asking nurses or doctors how frequently they complied with recommended hand hygiene practices, has been shown not to be a reliable indicator and is not recommended. Next slide. On this slide, I wanted to show you some results of a hand hygiene program implemented at the Hospital of St. Raphael in early 2001. On the upper graph on the slide, the y-axis shows hand hygiene compliance rates. You can see that during the baseline survey, hand hygiene compliance was only about 38%. This increased on each of the subsequent surveys, reaching a compliance rate of about 63% by the end of 2003. The lower colored bar on each of the vertical columns represents the proportion of all hand hygiene episodes that were done using an alcohol hand gel. In the baseline survey, only about 8% of all hand hygiene episodes were performed using alcohol, but this increased to 85% by the end of 2003. The lower graph on this slide shows the number of liters of alcohol-based hand gel used per 1,000 patient days. And you can see that during this period of time, the volume increased from about 3 liters per 1,000 patient days in 2000 to more than 30 liters per 1,000 patient days in 2003, a tenfold increase. So I think this demonstrates, as other studies have, is that promoting the use of an alcohol-based hand rub can lead to improved hand hygiene compliance. Now, I want to move on to another topic which has been sort of controversial in recent years, and that relates to hand hygiene for Clostridium difficile-associated disease. I mentioned earlier that alcohol-based hand rubs are not very effective against spore-forming organisms. As a result, there's been considerable debate recently regarding what type of hand hygiene is most appropriate when caring for patients with Clostridium difficile-associated diarrhea. For this reason, I wanted to spend a few minutes reviewing what we know about the efficacy of different hand hygiene techniques for removing Clostridium difficile from hands. Next slide. Batten and colleagues applied 10 to the 6th colony-forming units of Clostridium difficile to the hands of 10 volunteers and then determined how many counts were present on their hands. Half of the volunteers then washed their hands with plain soap and water, while the other half used a 4% chlorhexidine gluconate soap. The number of C. difficile remaining on the hands after hand washing was determined, and then each volunteer repeated the procedure 1 week later using an alternate preparation. The investigators found that there was no significant difference in the efficacy of the two preparations for removing C. difficile from hands. This result is actually not surprising, since none of the antiseptic agents commonly used for hand hygiene have good activity against spore-forming organisms. Next slide. More recently, Leishner and colleagues compared the effect of alcohol-based hand gels with the effect of chlorhexidine hand washing for removing C. difficile spores from hands. They applied 5 times 10 to the 5th colony-forming units of a non-toxigenic C. difficile strain to the hands of volunteers. Hand hygiene was then performed by using either a chlorhexidine gluconate-containing soap or with one of 3 different alcohol-based hand rubs. Then the hands were cultured both before and after performing the hand hygiene. After using the alcohol-based hand rub, a volunteer shook hands with a non-inoculated volunteer to determine the frequency of transfer of C. difficile that might take place during skin-to-skin contact. Next slide. The investigators found that the log reduction in C. difficile spore counts achieved with chlorhexidine gluconate hand washing was 2.5 logs. As you know, this would be equivalent to a greater than 99% reduction in the number of spores present on the hands of volunteers. In contrast, the alcohol-based hand rubs yielded 1.7 to 1.9 log reductions, which was significantly less than that achieved with the chlorhexidine gluconate soap. After using the alcohol-based hand rub, an average of 36% of the spores were transferred by handshaking. The authors concluded that hand washing with chlorhexidine gluconate soap is significantly more effective than using an alcohol-based hand rub. They also commented on the fact that the reduction in C. difficile on the hands achieved with the alcohol-based hand rub was better than expected, but still allowed transfer of spores to occur via a handshake. A hospital-wide hand hygiene program resulted in the use of more than 2,200 bottles of an alcohol-based hand rub during a 1-year period, but in this same hospital, the Clostridium difficile-associated disease incidence actually decreased slightly despite the use of a lot of alcohol-based hand rub. In the study by Gordon, during the 3-year period following hospital-wide installation of an alcohol-based hand rub and employee hand hygiene education, the incidence of CDAD remained the same as it was during the 3 years before they started using the alcohol. Again, no increase in C. diff. Next slide. Leishner and colleagues found that during a 27-month period following hospital-wide installation of an alcohol-based hand rub and employee education, that the incidence of CDAD remained the same during the 18 months before they started using the alcohol rub. And Elward and colleagues reported that following introduction of alcohol-based hand rub and an education program in 4 healthcare institutions, the incidence of CDAD decreased slightly in 2 hospitals and remained the same in the other 2 hospitals. This slide is the one I've already shown you, shows the increasing hand hygiene compliance at St. Raphael and the tenfold increased use of alcohol during the period 2000 through 2003. Then if you keep that in mind as we go to the next slide shows the number of patients with one or more stool tests positive for C. diff toxin per 1,000 discharges and per 1,000 patient days for the years 2000 through 2003. And what you can see is, although there was a slight increase in 2001, the incidence of C. difficile positivity actually decreased slightly during 2002 and 2003. So this result, combined with the 4 other studies I've already mentioned, provides reasonable evidence that the increasing use of alcohol-based hand rubs in hospitals is not likely to cause an increase in C. difficile disease. And many hospitals in the United States and some in other countries have noticed an increase in C. difficile disease rates in the last 3 or 4 years, but it has become apparent that much of that increase is due to the emergence of a new epidemic strain of C. difficile, which is more virulent. Next slide. In summary, to improve hand hygiene compliance, a multimodal campaign is required. Important elements of a successful program must include administrative support, providing healthcare workers with a well-tolerated alcohol-based hand rub near points of patient care, new educational and motivational materials based on the new guidelines, and monitoring hand hygiene compliance, and then providing healthcare workers with periodic feedback regarding their performance. This is my last slide, and it just shows a number of websites that I think may be helpful to you in your efforts to improve hand hygiene.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Boyce, for an Infection Control Week teleclass. I think it was absolutely perfect. Just a really quick question. For decades, we've been talking about hand hygiene and promoting hand hygiene, and sometimes we get pretty impressive results for a short time. To sustain a change seems to be very difficult. How has your effort been at your hospital to sustain the improvement that you saw since 2001?
Well, as we showed in some of the slides, our improvement increased over the last, for a period of 3 years, which is a pretty sustained improvement. Then it leveled off a little bit in 2004. And then more recently, we've done some other in-services. We've modified our computer-based education module and are looking at the issue of using nurses on the wards to give feedback to people more frequently, and our rates have gone back up again. So we're shooting for compliance rates in the 80 to 90% range, and we haven't achieved those yet, but it takes ongoing activity. This is not something that one can achieve in a 1 or 2 year effort.
And as you point out, there are more things than just the motivation. There needs to be the systemic issues as well, making the alcohol or the hand rubs available and where they're needed.
And giving people feedback about how they're doing.
Right. I understand that the Joint Commission in the U.S. is going to take a run at this topic as well, so hopefully we'll see something coming out of that. Dr. Boyce, thank you very much for another outstanding lecture. Thanks as well to Deb Canada for their support of infection control education and specifically their sponsorship of this teleclass. And finally, thanks to all of you for joining us. Have a great infection control week, everyone. We'll talk again soon. Goodbye.